Well, we are in the middle of a series, as you saw there, called Everything I Know About Open Life, I Learned from the A-Team. Truth is, I was born in the 80s, so I'm a little young for actually having watched the actual series of the A-Team back then. In fact, during that time of my early childhood, I was most likely watching Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, which are somewhat a far cry from the A-Team. The next action type of series that I would have watched on TV would have been the Power Rangers. Some of you would relate with this. I mean, those guys were amazing as they ran around and they had all their super little powers that they do. But something that is unique about the A-Team and the Power Rangers, each of the individuals had their own unique gifts and they had their own skill and they maybe had their own little power. But they really, when they would come together as a team or they would partner together, that's when amazing things would happen and they would really begin to put the just go on their opposition. I was listening to AM radio, ESPN, the other day. I don't know if many guys in here listen to ESPN very much. But I was listening, and they had Chris Ray on, who is from the Mariners, one of the relief pitchers. And they just really wanted to find out, what is it that is making the Mariners actually do well? They were doing terrible at the first part of the season. All of a sudden, they're over 500. And you know, if they win today, hey, there's another little series. So things are going well for the Mariners. They want to say, what's the chemistry here to Chris? So Chris is just being candid and open and honest. And he goes, truth, I've been on some losing teams. He's like, in my history in the league, been on some losing teams. We've always talked about chemistry. We've always talked about how if we want to win, we've got to learn how to just be friends. We've got to learn how to like each other enough so that when we get on the field and we get out there and we're actually in the game, we play well together. He's like, but we never had that until now. He's like, now I'm on a team that understands what chemistry is about. He said, when we actually go out on the road and we're playing our games, we'll hang out together. We have fun together. We laugh together. We do things with each other. We actually are friends. He's like, I'm experiencing something that is just nothing like what I've ever experienced before, but we love the game and we just love each other. There's camaraderie. And he said, this is the chemistry that is really enabling us to do some good things right now. Let's hope they continue. It is because we have camaraderie on our team. There's a sense of community. Following him, a guy from Sports Nation gets on there, and he's not quite as in love with the M's as perhaps the rest of us are. And he tries to bring a little bit of realistic to it, and I think it's just negativity. But in his point of view, he said, the Mariners are actually going to stumble along the way. They're not going to do well. And so, you know, all of a sudden you're like, man, who is this guy? But he brought up a really good point. He said this, you can have the best pitchers on your team. You can have an outstanding lineup of pitchers. I mean, Felix is great. He's like, but if you don't fill the rest of that team up, if you don't have a good defense and a good offense of other players, if they're not playing well, everything will fall apart. You can't just win a game with a pitcher. You can't just win a game with a catcher. You actually have to have all the parts of the puzzle working together. This last Monday was an amazing day. It was a day off, and I was sitting on the couch and started thinking about, okay, today's just been a really good day. I got some yard work done, which is kind of refreshing and to do, and sitting there on the couch in the evening, and I'm kind of thinking, you know, what would make things better? And I was checking Facebook, and I thought, actually, what would make things better right now is a big slab of steak, one. Two, watching Monday Night Football. I love watching Monday Night Football. It's just so fun. I can't wait for the season to start up. With that, thanks for adding a little light to my red. But we're going to be watching Monday Night Football. I'm just stoked, excited. I put it on there. Other people are like, yeah, that would make things so much better. Hypothetically, let's say that because I love football, and I play catch with my younger brother whenever he comes over and visits, whether it's baseball or football, we always go out and we play catch in the park. Let's say I love football so much that I run, I grab my ball, and this is Monday. I grab it, and I'm like, I'm going to go to the park. So I run down to the park, which is, you know, two houses down. It's quite a jaunt. Go down to the park, and I'm down there, and I'm like, love football, great day, life is good. So I just kind of take my ball, I back up, and I sit there, and I throw an amazing spiral. And I look, I go, oh, shoot. Well, now I got to go get the ball. And so I have to run down and get the ball. Because here's the reality is it's not really playing catch. You're not really playing a game if you're by yourself when you're doing football. All I'm doing is practicing throwing a ball. I'm not actually, until somebody is down there who can retrieve it either by catching or running after it for me, saving me the trouble of going and retrieving my ball, until that happens, this is simply a game of practice. I'm going through the motions, but I'm not actually completing. It's not actually going to be that much fun after the first couple of minutes. Life is kind of like that. Life is a team sport. We each have our own unique skills, our gifts, our abilities, our vocations, our experiences. We all have different things we come from, but it's when we do things together that life begins to really make sense. We're created to do life together. Let's go with that first point that we're going to throw up here. We're created to do life together. If you've read much of Scripture or you've heard the story of creation, in Genesis, you read this account of where God really puts everything into motion. God creates this universe that we get to live in, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's amazing. God envisioned this all, and he creates it just by speaking. We see mountains that just pop up. Mount Rainier looks fantastic when you're coming into Bonnie Lake on a clear day. It's majestic. You look at that in awe, and you go, oh my God, you are amazing. To God, you're praying. And Lord, you are just so incredible for what you have done. And it's just, I am nothing. Well, who am I? You created this mountain. And we see streams, or we see Lake Taps. And we go, man, God, you're creative. This is incredible. It's beautiful. And we see the deserts, and I don't like to hang out in the desert much because it's hot. But you know, what kind of creativity to fill thousands and thousands of acres with sand, and it's just dry, and nobody wants to live there. What kind of a God? So God creates all this stuff, and then you're like, man, God, you are fairly creative. But then he takes a step further, and he says, but not enough just to create real estate, not enough just to do something beautiful with the land. What about making some animals? So God makes this lion, and he creates a lion that goes around, and it's ferocious, and it's kind of the king of the jungle. And you look at that, and at the zoo, they're fun to watch, and they're fun to watch play. But if there was no fence, we'd be running scared out of our minds because of the power that this beast has. Beautiful creation. We look at the elephant, very unique, big long nose. I'm not sure I would want my nose to be like that, but he's got this big long snout, and it's a huge mammoth animal. God's very creative. Cats, dogs, we maybe have them in our house. God created them. Cats have a mind of their own. Dogs can be either your best friend or your worst enemy. God created slugs, you know? And you look at that, it's the most nasty thing in the world. And you just want to get rid of them, and you use all the slug bait you can, and they just keep popping up, and it's just very annoying, at least in my yard. But God created them. It's actually very creative when you look at it. It's nasty. It's gross. Why would God do it? God's just showing off how good he is. But then at the end of this reading through the account of creation, what we see is something amazing take place. See, God has done all this good stuff. God has created an amazing universe, and he creates all these animals and creatures to fill it. But he looks down and he goes, yeah, those are all great contestants, but my grand finale is coming up. And he creates man in his image. He creates man in his image. This dude named Adam, all of a sudden we read about him going through life. And he's naming animals, he's having fun. And I'm sure it is a little bit fun for a little while. It's like taking the football and throwing it and running down and grabbing it and taking it and throwing it again. And you run after it and you get it. And then you throw it again. And pretty soon you're just going, this is stupid. What am I doing? This is no fun at all. I need somebody to come out here and play with me. So Adam's like sitting by the lake and he's watching a bald eagle flying around and the sun's setting and he sees Rainier sitting over here and he goes, that is the most amazing thing ever. And he watches a little fish jump. He goes, did you just see that? Hey, Bauer. And his cat kind of looks up at him. What? Did you see that? He yawns, goes back to sleep. Why? It's a cat. The cat could care less what's going on. The cat doesn't interact with us quite like we would desire. So here's Adam, and God notices Adam and says in chapter 2, verse 18, he says, it's not good for man to be alone. Now, in one sense, he's talking about marriage, and he ends up creating a woman named Eve. But even more than that, he's not just talking sexual. However, it's a fantastic thing that he created a woman. But he's talking about honest dialogue. He's talking about somebody you can share your life with. You can share experiences with. You can talk about things that are going on. You can walk through the park together. You can just dialogue about the cool stuff that God's doing and the stuff that just makes you really upset. You can share and you can argue. You can bicker and fight, but there's interaction that happens with another human, and God says, now it's good. This is now complete. This is what I created. I created you, but I also created you with a desire for relationship. Yes, primarily with God, but also with another person. In the midst of our Twitter and our Facebook world, of which I am a part of, we can get inundated with people following us or following other people. We get inundated with just having tons of friends. And the reality is, though, is that this isn't true friendship. A person can have 4,000 friends on Facebook and still be completely lonely. Facebook and Twitter and other social networking sites are only used to enhance our current relationships. Without having a relationship there, it's really just out there in the world, and it's just a thought that could be nice. There was a study that was done on loneliness a few years ago. A guy named John Cacioppo, who's a neuroscientist and psychologist from the University of Chicago. In the report, he says this: society tends to think of it as an individual characteristic. There are just loners, he says. But that's the wrong conception of what loneliness is. It's a biological signal motivating us to correct something that we need for genetic survival. Here's a neuroscientist. He studies the brain. He studies how that works in relation to a psychology. He says it's a biological signal that God has hardwired that is reminding us that we need something else for genetic survival. He continues on, we need quality relationships. We don't survive well on our own. This isn't a man who professes to be about God's ways or to be a follower of Jesus at all. He's looking at it strictly from the side of things of how we are created as human beings. We don't do life well alone. Some of the most significant work that has been done on this was by a guy named Edward T. Hall in the 60s. He wrote a book called The Hidden Dimension. He concludes that there are four different areas in our lives that we need to have filled in order to have this complete sense of fulfillment within community and within our lives. He labeled it four different spaces. Number one, we have a public space. That'd be kind of like a gathering here where we gather together for one focal purpose, and it's an outside influence, probably like somebody who's talking to you. But we are all gathered together in a big public space. We need those in our life. We need those types of gatherings, a concert, the mall, going to the lake when it's surrounded with a bunch of people. We also need a second space called a social space. And this is where you begin to interact a little bit. People begin to get a snapshot of who you are. You begin to open your life up just a little bit to those around you. Maybe it's those who are sitting next to you today and you begin to share your name. They get a quick glimpse into your life. We need social interaction. He goes on, we need what's called the personal space. This becomes more of a good close group of friends, maybe around 10, 15 people that you really begin to open up your fear. You begin to open up, here's the things that are really going on in my life with my work and my family, and not being totally open, but just a little bit so they get a little more insight and begin to share and do life together. Then he goes into the last one, which is more of your intimate space and often called your naked space. And this is, can be your married relationship, but also the best of friends, the ones that you can go grab a coffee with or a beer with. And you're talking about the stuff that's going on in your life. You're being very open and very, very transparent, but you're okay with it because you trust them so much. We can be surrounded by hundreds of people, or we can be just in a married relationship, but with no other friends. And we'll still feel lonely if we just have those filled. There's four different areas, and it's when we begin to have input into each of those areas that we begin to feel like, oh man, I'm doing life. I love it. This is exciting. Because it's a brain thing. It's a chemical. It's a signal from your brain that's saying, this is how life is supposed to be. Maybe you can relate with a lady named Tina Kerfurst. She's a project coordinator, 46-year-old from Seattle. She said this, I get lonely sometimes, but I tend not to seek people out to do things because they're all married or committed or need to find a babysitter, and then it just turns into a circus. Some of you hung out with people with kids. I went out to dinner with some people from work the other night, and one of the women kept saying, "Wow, you are funny. Why don't we hang out more?" And I just thought, well, you have a husband, a 12-year-old, a 17-year-old, and it just doesn't happen. You don't have time for me. You don't have time for me. On your note sheet, the next point, doing life together requires intentionality. Requires intentionality. Nobody likes to diet. Let's just be honest. Nobody likes to change their eating habits, but we all want to look thin. We all want to be in better shape, but we don't really want to go work out. If you want to become something, you have to take the steps to get there. At times, you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice those amazing, delicious foods that just taste so good because they're high in sugar. And it just like, you want it, your mouth is salivating when you see it. But you have to say no if you want to become something else. If you want to achieve the result, you sometimes have to sacrifice those things that you want. Same thing happens with our life. We're a very busy culture. You've got a schedule to keep. You've got a boss who's going to make sure that you're doing your job. Maybe you've got a spouse who has a honey-do list for you. Plus, you got to go on dates, and you got kids, and you got all this stuff. And then you want your unwind time just for you to watch TV. And you have all this stuff going on. It's filling up your schedule. And months can go by, and all of a sudden, you're sitting there, and you're looking at it going, wow, I haven't spent any time with anybody. I haven't had any meaningful relationships. Maybe. Maybe we've been surrounded by people, but we haven't ever really connected. Doing life together, we have to be intentional. It takes carving it out in our schedule. Doing life together makes life more fulfilling. The next point we're going to throw in there. Notice I didn't say that it makes life easy. Doing life together doesn't make life easy. It simply makes it more fulfilling. The truth is life is hard. Life can be really hard. There's going to be times when you have stress at work. There are going to be times when your family situation is not going the way you had planned it to go. There are going to be times when you're not sure if you can make it another day, and the thought of suicide starts to creep in. There can be those times because life can be hard. It truly can. Maybe you have a death of somebody in your family or somebody that's close to you. Tragedy strikes us all in different ways. Life can be hard. But when you're in that personal or that social interaction mode, when you've got people you're connecting with, when you've got a group of people surrounding you that say, "We're doing life with you," all of a sudden life's hardness becomes a little bit easier. Not easy, easier, because you have others who are going to come alongside with you. Paul, who's a guy in the New Testament, writes in the book of Romans to the church, the early Christian church in Rome, says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn." Truth is, life is also good. There are also really good moments. The moments when you all of a sudden you get a raise in today's economy, or maybe you finally got your job. The moment you find out you're pregnant, or the moment your child says, "I love you," for the very first time. Maybe it's when the Mariners do win and things are going really good. Or maybe when it's a day like yesterday and hopefully today when the sun is out and you're going, life is just great. And then you drive by the gas station, it drops a couple pennies. Life can't get much better than this. But in all that excitement, who do you share it with? Who do you share it with? Being in community and doing life together enables you to have an opportunity to celebrate with each other and to mourn with each other. Open Life has launched groups as our strategy to doing life together to fill a need that is social and at times personal. We believe in groups. We believe that each person should be in a group. But maybe you're not fully sure that you're ready to do this. You're not fully sure you're ready to do the whole open part of Open Life. You're not sure if you're ready for the real relationship. And if that's the case, if that's maybe where you're at today, then we got a quick little video. Maybe this will resonate with you.
Are you tired of small groups always getting into your business, trying to get you to share your feelings, discuss your past, confess your sins? Are you just looking for a place to kick it, network, maybe get some free grub? Me too. That's why I created what I believe to be the world's first openly shallow small group. We're not here to deal with messy stuff like feelings and emotions. You got problems? You deal with that. You're an adult. Life ain't easy. So stop the pity party. We all have our issues. We don't really want to do life together. Frankly, at Shallow Small Group, we try not to do much of anything at all. You'll never hear us use the term unpack that thought. We're sure it's packed away for a really good reason. And you'll never hear us use the term accountability unless you're talking about someone who deals with numbers. Hey, dude, thanks for doing my taxes. You have great accountability. And spiritual growth? Who wants growth? I had a growth removed last week. It wasn't pleasant. There's no pressure here to remember each other's name.
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, hey, man. How's it going?
That's good.
Hey, Chief.
Oh, dude.
Captain, what's going on?
We know you have a name, and that's the important thing. Group discussion? You got tickets to the big game? Sweet. Let's spend some time on that. Oh, you and your wife are struggling financially? There's tension in the relationship? That's not really the vibe we're going for. We avoid conflict like the plague.
Who wants cake?
Come on and get it!
And there will never, ever be an awkward silence. That's our guarantee to you. We hate bad theology as much as the next guy, and we know the surest way to prevent bad theology is to avoid theology altogether. And outreach? This is the only outreach you'll ever have to do.
Some people say we're superficial, but hey, the word super's and superficial. I mean, who doesn't want to be super?
Shallow small group, because when things get too deep, people drown. Won't you join us?
Obviously, this is a satire on the way that we value groups, and it does take being vulnerable a little bit. It takes opening up your life a little bit when we get into a group setting to really do life together. This is mostly just an imitation. This is like you're trying to lose weight by eating some vegetables, but really you're just deep frying them. It's not doing anything for you. So I'm going to introduce you to Brian, whose wife Kayla and their new baby Owen are here as well, but I'm going to have Brian come up. Brian's also leading one of our groups this summer that launches today and is starting today. I asked Brian to share just a few thoughts with us regarding groups and his interaction with them. Brian, if you could, just share for a moment for us, what do you believe are some of the benefits to being a part of a group?
Well, the benefits, I think, can impact each one of us in a very different and unique way. As far as kind of the overall benefits, for me, the word that really comes to my word is to my mind is togetherness, and just really brings that harmony that we're here together. God's kingdom is so big, so vast, so great that oftentimes we can overlook the important things, I think, and the important things are people. And so for us, from my heart, for what we are, groups are just an amazing way to connect with people, to be together. I don't know if you've ever said this question to yourself or had somebody else say it, like, no one knows me at that church, or I don't know anybody. I don't know if that's you've ever heard that or said that yourself, but I hate that question because it's so easy, I think, to be a part and just to get involved and to meet new people. And sometimes it takes that push to get yourself out there. And for some of us, it really is that. It's that push where maybe you need someone to really invite you. Yeah. But once you get out there, it really brings that togetherness where you don't feel like, oh, I'm just going to a church or your church, but you're going to a church family. And for me, that's what it's all about. We refer to church as a church family. Yeah. Because we're together. We're in life together. Yeah. And we're sharing it together.
Now, you mentioned the word family, the idea of a mm-hmm. church family, but how has groups maybe been a benefit to you personally in your life, but also in your family's life? How has participating in that structure really been a benefit to you guys?
As far as even with the structure of it, I know sometimes we say, well, it's every week for 2 months. But even with that starting and stopping point, I think is really helpful and refreshing within that. But as far as how it's maybe impact us is, it really helps bring us together. You know, let's be honest. Sometimes we just don't feel like wanting to go to someone's house or go play some games or whatever it might be for that particular small group. But when you actually get out there and you do it and you participate, more often than not, you're going to walk away feeling refreshed. You're going to walk away feeling like, man, I'm glad that I went. Hopefully that's what you take away from it. Opposed to sitting around watching TV and then going to bed or doing whatever it is that you would usually do. It's a time where you're actually talking to people. You're getting to know one another. And you're able to get into each other's life, so to speak. Not that you have to be too personal or anything, but just that you're together. And you know, there's something powerful that happens when we can actually laugh together. Mm-hmm. And when you can be around people where you can laugh, you can relax, you can have fun, it's amazing what God will do in those times.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's brought us together as a family, but also just brings us together as a church family, because we're in this together.
Right. Good. Now, there's perhaps a couple of people that are here today, and groups are starting up this week. In fact, we have one group that starts today, this afternoon, at Allen York Park, playing Ultimate Frisbee. Another one starts on Thursday with barbecuing up at Panorama Heights area. What would you say to somebody who hasn't yet signed up for a group? They're looking at it in their handout, and they're looking at this going, oh, there's a couple different things going on, but I'm not quite sure. And they're on the fence. They're thinking they want to. What would you say to them to maybe help persuade them to go ahead and fill that out?
This kind of echoes what you've been preaching about today, but somebody once said that there's two things in life you can't do alone. You cannot be married, and you cannot be a Christian, and I fully and just wholeheartedly believe that. Christians, we're in this together. We're here together. And so for someone who's maybe on the fence, I say just get involved. Come. It's easy. The one today that we have at 1:30, just show up. You have a friend in town, family member, what? Bring them. It's fun. We're just going to have a relaxing time. I got some water, Ultimate Frisbee, and we're just going to have some fun. We're going to get to know each other, and it's just going to be a great time. So I would say it's easy here at this church. It's fun, it's relaxed, and it's relational. And so,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you. So there you got it. If you haven't signed up yet, you're going to want to do that right now. One of the things that we're going to move on with my last point for today, doing life is part of Jesus' plan. It's part of Jesus' plan. There's a verse in the New Testament that really has been sticking with me quite a bit over the last few months. And it's found in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. Jesus responding to a couple of statements given by his disciples in regards to a question he's asked, which was, who do people say I am? And who do you say I am? They respond back. Peter gives a great answer, says, you're the Son of God. Jesus turns around and says, it's on that statement I'm going to build my church. I will build my church. What stands out to me in this, we can pick that verse apart in a few different ways, but what really stands out to me that I highlight is the word my. The church is his. It's not any one of ours. This isn't Jason's church. It's not Thad's church. It's Jesus' church. We're a part of his kingdom. We are part of his family, ultimately. So if it's not a structure, it's not a building, it's actually people. And if that's true, then what should the church look like? What should this following of people who say that Jesus is God and we want to follow him, what should that look like? And a few books later, you read in the book of Acts, which really gives the details of this first Christian church that has begun to start up and that believe in who Jesus is and who he said he was. In chapter 2, verse 41, says, those who accepted his message were baptized, and about 3,000 were added to their number that day. Speaking of a message that Peter gives to a bunch of people, obviously over 3,000 people are there. He probably lost his voice. But he's speaking, 3,000 out of their number. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled. They sold property, their possessions. They gave to those who were in need. Every day they continued to meet together. They broke bread together. They ate together. They praised God. They did all this stuff. God continued to add. It's an incredible picture of what this early church looks like. Go ahead two more chapters into chapter 4 of Acts. It says, all of the believers were of one heart and one mind. You see unity that is all of a sudden taking place. We see here a picture of a community built around the message of Jesus. But we see it, as we read in chapter 2, we see it built around a couple of things, not just one primary thing. We see it built around teaching, which is highly important. We also see it built around fellowship, another key ingredient to true Christian community. Maybe you're not a part of following Jesus yet. You wouldn't call yourself a Christian. Maybe you're on the fence on that one too. You're kind of pushing back. You're not quite sure. Guess what? Doing life together is hardwired into you as well. You are created just like all of us are created. We are all created by one God who wired us, just as this neuroscientist has said, with a desire to have relationship. You are created for that. You can do life together with us, with those around you, before you've had a relationship with Jesus. Now, the cool thing happens is when you decide, ultimately, when you finally make this decision, you're saying, I'm all in. I'm going to follow Jesus. I believe in what he did, and I believe I'm a sinner, but he has grace for me, and I want to join in. When you do that, you're all of a sudden surrounded by a huge family, a network of people that are on that same life journey with you. But it really comes into those two things, teaching and fellowship. Our Sunday morning gatherings and teaching are very important. It's important that you make it part of your schedule, part of your calendar, to gather together with other believers where you're going to be hear things from Scripture explained in maybe a way that will impact your life on a day-to-day basis. But it's really when you begin to move out of this teaching environment and into real life, and you begin to allow God's Spirit to really take those truths, embedding themselves into you, and you flesh it out every day. When you begin to live in the truth, that's when it begins to make a difference. That's when your life change begins to happen. It happens when you are able to interact with some of that truth that's found in the gospel of Jesus. Groups allow that to happen. It allows you a place to have an honest dialogue with somebody, to be open about your questions that maybe were raised on a Sunday morning that we didn't cover, but God has brought it to your mind. You go, I don't know if I agree with that. And you're really working through it. You're struggling with it. It's okay. Groups allow you an opportunity to be able to talk with somebody about it. The bad theology is a theology we never talk about. It's okay. We give an opportunity to say, here's where I'm at in life. Groups will provide that. Groups provide a social and at times a personal environment. Not one of us has the answers to every single question that will be asked. Not one of us has all of the answers to every question. But together, when we enter into a conversation centered around Jesus and the knowledge of God, we discover through Scripture, and we begin to formulate our view of theology of who God is, but also our view of ourselves and how we encounter and interact with this God. It's then we discover that the answer to our questions are summed up in the reality of God and who he is, provided through his son Jesus, through his resurrection and through his grace, that life all of a sudden begins to make a little bit more sense. In closing, as we wrap out this morning, the main idea that we want you to walk away with, one of our culture phrases, is that we're all about doing life together. We're not meant to live this life alone. We aren't meant to just go through life on our own. It's quite boring sometimes. We each have different life experiences. Perhaps we align ourselves more closely with some than with others, based on our experiences or based on our personalities. We have different vocations. We have different family history. But we're all on this journey of life together. In fact, another reality is that when we look around the room this morning, we may find ourselves at total different spaces in our understanding of God and our understanding of where we are at personally with him. We all vary. We're all different. We are all on different areas in that journey together. How we respond to it, and engaging with others. But when we begin to allow ourselves to interact with others who are on the same journey, we begin to find encouragement, we begin to find strength, and once again, we are emboldened to live out this life on Jesus' mission of redemption of the world. So would you join us as we do life together? Lord, we thank you once again for an opportunity to gather, to look at your scripture, to understand who you are. Father, I pray that even in the words that weren't spoken by myself today, that your spirit would speak, would bring truth, would maybe bring conviction that's from you and not from us. But God, would we enter into a true relationship with you that is powerful, that is life-changing, that goes deeper and further than just a Sunday morning gathering where we feel like we did our good deed and we went to church. But Lord, would we begin to actually flesh that out? Would we begin to live out our life of faith? God, if we haven't signed up for a group, would we be challenged to do that this morning? And if it's not this time, maybe it's the next session of groups, but God, would we be able to make sure that we are filling those four different areas of our life that you created us with a void for in the area of relationship? Lord, would we seek those out? Finding ourselves surrounded in a public place isn't necessarily hard, but at times it can be hard to be social. At times it can be hard to be personal with people and actually having dinner with another person. And for most of us, it can be very difficult to have an intimate space where we break down everything about our life. God, would you help us be proactive in seeking